My challenge here today is that I've got, 45, 50 minutes to introduce the idea of writing agents and spiders. And so what I'm going to do here is I've got three main goals I want to accomplish here in the session. One of them is I want to convince you that writing these things is a worthwhile activity. Even if you don't do it professionally, and there are a lot of opportunities to do this kind of stuff professionally, it's just a really fun thing to do. I know a lot of people who maybe don't code as much as they'd like at work, and they get home and they got this need to code, you know. So they do silly things like, do a database that catalogs their CDs or something silly. You can have a lot more fun writing spiders and web agents, because once these things start moving, they just become kind of organic, especially when they interface with some very non-web kind of things like, cell phones and printers and fax machines and stuff. It can get very fun. The other goal I have is I want to get you guys thinking about ideas for spiders and web agents that you want to go off and design on your own. So I'm going to give some suggestions for ways of coming up with ideas. It's easy to write a spider or an agent. The hard part is having a really great one that does something really cool. So hopefully I can kind of give you some ideas on how to come up with some ideas. The other thing I'm going to do is provide you with some basic technical skills. And pretty much all you really need to do these things is basic technical skills. There's so many great software available now that you can download to do wonderful things, and there's some great programming languages. So it's taken a lot of the mystery out of doing this. So a lot of it is just being introduced to how to do this kind of stuff. So I'm going to make some suggestions for programming languages, things that I've used in the past, some downloading techniques, some parsing methods, things that I've discovered over the last, 3-4 years, and ways of making fault-tolerant designs. You've got to keep in mind that unless you're spidering your own site or your own server or a known server, these things are going to change at the whim of whoever is the webmaster. So I'll give you some ideas for writing fault-tolerant spiders and web agents. Real quick bio. My name is Mike Schrenk. I am a freelance internet strategist and developer. I'm based in Minneapolis, but I work all over the place. The nice thing about being based in Minneapolis is that you're only like two and a half hours from anywhere in the country. The bad thing about being in Minneapolis is that you're two and a half hours from anything in the country. So, spiders and agents are a large part of my business. They're not the only thing I do, but I'm doing more and more of them as time goes on. People are seeing that you can do some really cool things. For example, I have one client that's basing their entire business on what I'm doing, and I've got others that see that they can get a real competitive advantage over their competitors by being able to know things before anybody else knows it, and then being able to act on it really, really quickly. So there's some real powerful things you can do here that make a lot of business sense, in addition to being a lot of fun to write. Okay, what's the connection between spiders and agents and hacking? The way I do it, it's the classic hacking activity. If you belong to the MIT school of hacking, you break down technology. You grab something, you look at it, you figure out what it does, how it works, and then you recombine technology to do something that was never intended by the original designers. So it's kind of the MacGyver approach to web development. You're taking things from all different places and doing really bizarre things. You can also do some things that are useful security things, like you can monitor logs, you can look for unauthorized servers on a network, you can test system integrity, you can do all kinds of cool stuff like that. Okay, what is an agent? Real basically here, if you can think of a browser as being a very general purpose agent, and it's general purpose in the fact that basically you just point it someplace and it goes there, okay? If that's all you do with the internet, you're really missing out on a lot of stuff. And I'll show you some examples of some stuff here in a bit. All agents work on a client-server relationship. So you've got, in this case, a browser sends out a request to some web server. It gets a response back. And generally the initial response is some headers, HTTP headers, that are sent back. We'll talk more about those later. And also some HTML. Now, a client must ask for everything. So in other words, if you went to the old DEF CON page, there are 9 separate images that are on that page in addition to the HTML. So after it receives the HTML page, it's got to send out requests for all those images, and all those images come back. What do spiders and agents do? Like I said earlier, this is not difficult stuff. They download data, they parse and filter data, and then they take some kind of action. And in all the examples I'm going to show you, pretty much they all do the exact same thing. What they download and what kind of action they take is entirely up to you. When you're thinking about agents and spiders, don't limit yourself to spiders. Spiders are just a special purpose agent that acts specifically on links. So they'll go and they'll grab a web page, look for all the links, and then they'll grab a web page, look for information on that page, then gather up all the links, and then do the same thing on all those links. So don't limit yourself to spidering. That's only a tiny, tiny portion of what you can do with these things. Try to instead think about providing web services, okay? Now, if you think about web services, you know, you can still employ spiders if you want to in your services, but I think it gives you a little better framework to stand on when you're thinking about what kind of things you might want to do. Why write a spider or an agent? Well, like I said earlier, browsers are kind of dumb. You know, you point them in one direction, and they'll go off, and they'll do it, and then they'll stop and wait for the next instruction. Well, with an agent or with a spider, you can automatically surf the web, which is very nice. You can also filter out information that you're not interested in. You can also download and repackage information for later non-web devices. So in other words, you could write a little deal that goes off to your favorite web page, downloads it, and does clipping, and stores it in a manner that would be good for a PDA. Or you can send stuff off to printers or fax machines. The other reason you want to do agents and spiders is, especially if you're not interested in images, you can download stuff really, really quickly. So speed is a big, big advantage. Okay, where do project ideas come from? Think about areas where you can bridge things. In other words, I've got a bunch of stuff there, everything from HTTP servers to phones to webcams to printers, instant messaging, fax machines. Think of instances where you would want to combine those types of things. Another thing to think about when you're looking for coming up with an idea for writing a spider or an agent is look for things that you can automate. For example, there is a web page called www.whois.net. that is run by Network Solutions. And the really cool thing about this page is that if you want to take out a domain name, instead of, you know, going to register.com or something and just typing in the name, taken. How about this one? No, it's taken. It's not very effective. What you can do with whois.net is you can type in a word or a series of characters, and it'll return all of the domain names with that series of characters as a subset of the full name. So if you want to do a website, for example, on food or something, you can type in food. It'll return all the domain names that have the word food in it. It's pretty useful. The thing that makes it not quite so useful is that it only returns, I think, 10 or 15 names at a time. And as you can imagine, it might return, you know, you sit there going next, 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 and there's thousands of these things, right? So one little spider I wrote is I go out and I spider this page, and I just type in the word that I'm looking for as a subset of a domain name, and basically it just returns all of them. It's much, much faster. Another example, or another thing to think about when you want to automate stuff, is think about things that you can perform periodically. I talked a little bit earlier about doing things with PDAs. Let's say, for example, you work for a corporation that has people in the field all over the country. You could set it up so that at night, your field representative's computers would go out and download some information from your corporate website, and then this agent could transform this stuff and put it where it needs to go so that when the salesperson or whoever it is in the morning does a hot sync on their PDA, they've got all that information in their PDA. So that's an example of something that you would want to perform periodically. Okay, let's look at some ideas here. Automatically send an email to your mother every time there's a story about you on CNN. This may or may not be a good idea. I guess it depends on your mom. So what would you do? You would download pages from CNN. You'd parse, look for stories about you, and that's really a matter of a simple string comparison, really. I mean, it's not hard. Then the action is you would email your mom. You can either email a link to the story, or you could email the actual story. Okay, create a service that provides real-time weather data. I know someone is, in fact, I know several people who are doing this. This is actually a useful thing. Download pages from the National Weather Service, parse out weather information and forecasts, and then make this stuff available via some type of either a SOAP or some other web protocol. So basically, it's just a service sitting there that people can access. Track the web technology used by each of the Fortune 500 companies. Okay, how would you do this? You would download the HTTP headers from a set of web pages that you have stashed away in a database. You'd parse out the server information. And then you would store the stuff in a database and run comparisons and do whatever you want to do with it. You guys remember the cartoon? There were two dogs sitting on the street. One of them said to the other one, "The nice thing about the internet is no one knows you're a dog." That's not always the case. I actually met my dog on the internet. There's Jackson right now. He's showing the proper technique for standing on a 17. If he knew I was talking about him, he'd kill me. Anyway, no, I actually met my dog on the internet. A lot of animal shelters and rescue groups will have websites where they'll post dogs that are available for adoption. It's kind of like a canine dating service. And that's where I met my dog. It made me think, you know, you could, if you wanted to, you could periodically run a spider to check when a Jack Russell or any other kind of dog is available at your local shelter. And again, it's a simple, it's download, parse, filter, take action. You'd download pages from your local animal shelters and dog rescue organizations. You'd filter out information about Jack Russell Terriers, and then you can send yourself an email when a dog is found. Number five, scout all the top employment websites for jobs that match your skills and automatically send the contact person a resume. Good idea? I don't know. I don't know if I do this one, but it's the kind of thing you can do. Again, you download pages from employment websites, parse and filter jobs that fit your skills, and gather employee email addresses. And the action you would take is you'd automatically send a resume to appropriate employers. Number six, write a web agent that returns the best price on a dozen roses delivered in Chicago. Okay, this is actually something you could sell if you could do a service like this. In fact, there are some like this out there. MySimon, I think, comes to mind. And I think CNET does something like this for computer hardware. So what you would do, again, you download delivery pages or flower delivery pages, check for best prices in Chicago or wherever it is you're looking, and then you'd print the names of suppliers, offerings, and prices. Okay, you're starting to see some similarity here? These are vastly different kinds of ideas of things you can do. The process is very, very similar. Hide a camera in your medicine cabinet. When the door opens, take a digital picture and post it on a website. www.medicinecabinet.com. This might also be an idea for a business. I'm not sure. So here what you would do basically is you'd have some kind of a trigger mechanism. I mean, you can interface any kind of hardware you want to an agent, right? Anything, even a medicine cabinet. So you can have some kind of a switch where the door opens, bam, a picture's taken. You really don't have to parse anything, but it's pretty easy to post the stuff on a website then. Okay. automatically analyze server logs for anomalies and send to a printer when found. So here, instead of going out on the internet, you could conceivably load a local file, a file on your own network, I suppose even a log file you find on somebody else's network. You could parse out anomalies, and then you could print out things that don't look right so you can look at them later. Create an email to fax service. This is one I actually did. I started writing spiders and agents back about 4 years ago when I was working. I was a consultant over at Medtronic, and I was involved with a lot of telemedicine kind of stuff. And this is one I actually did. I set it up so that if you sent an email to a specific email address, it would take the contents of the body, and it would fax it to the number that you put in the subject line. So how do you do that? Well, you go out and you get the emails that are sent to a specific address. You parse the message and the phone number, and then you fax the message to the phone number. It's embarrassingly easy. This idea I love. Write a new front end to somebody else's online catalog. The idea is not as strange as it sounds. For example, if you have a client that receives a royalty on things sold on another website, people might want to make the whole thing look like it's theirs, right? And if they have a relationship with this other company, they have every right to do that. So this is not such a far-fetched thing to do. So here you would somehow gather the contents of a form that would normally appear on this other website. And you'd gather the variables, you know, they'd all come from databases or cookies or stuff. And you make sure that your variables and methods match the form that your target is. And then you basically submit the stuff to the target site. This idea I like, but I'm hesitant to do it. Start a digital clipping service that databases information and images about both your client and their competition by spidering web, FTP, and news servers along with DNS records and new domain name applications. I'll tell you why I'm not doing this a little bit later. But basically what you would do is you would download company data from various sources. You would parse out everything that's applicable about your client or your competitor. I suppose if you were really smart about this, both the client and the competitor would be your clients, right? So it would save work. And then the action you would take is you would somehow post all this stuff on a central database with a centralized web server so that they could go and access their data. Okay, those are some ideas, okay? You see, they all have very similar process. What they do, though, can be very, very different. I've written agents in a number of languages. I first started doing things in Java. Again, back when I was doing telemedicine things. And I was doing it primarily in Java because I wanted to have a graphical user interface. That was a nice way of doing it. I did some things in Perl. Perl's very powerful for this kind of stuff. I did some stuff in TickleTK. In fact, I actually wrote an article. It's the March 2000 edition of Web Techniques, which I think now changed their name to New Architect. If you're interested, I'll have a reference to this and all URLs that I'm using at the end of the presentation. But I did an article about writing intelligent web agents in TickleTK. For about the last 2.5 years, I've been writing almost everything in PHP. I love the language. I've never had to debug the interpreter, which is a very nice thing. And it just runs so reliably. And it's very similar to Perl. But I believe the syntax is much simpler than Perl. So, if you're going to download files with PHP, how do you do it? Well, if you're doing a local file, you'd use the method I'm showing in number one there, where basically you just create a file handle to whatever it is you want to access. If you want to do a web page there in number two, it's the same thing. You just open a link to a URL. Then you've got a handle that you use to reference that URL. PHP also allows you to do FTP if you need to do FTP. I think, did I tell you I wasn't going to show you any code? My intent was to not show you any code, but here's some code. Actually, here's a partial listing. If you're interested in looking at this, I'm not going to walk through it. This is on the CD-ROM, I believe. Basically, this is an example of doing socket programming in PHP, and this particular example goes out and it performs a whois function that looks like this. I had a client who we were talking about some stuff and about doing some stuff like this, and he told me that the people who run the whois servers, they watch how many hits they get from particular IP addresses, and they only allow so many in a 24-hour period. Anybody else hear about this? They do that? Do you know what the number is? Thousands? Good. Okay, launching your agent. I tend to do everything from a command line, even though I write the stuff in PHP. A lot of people don't write PHP programs this way. They'll write Perl programs that they launch from a command line. You can also do it from PHP. If you're going to do it, this gives you some advantages. For one, you don't need to run a web server. So like if you're doing stuff in PHP and you're doing it as a module with Apache or something, I tend to not like doing that because, I don't know, I might be fooling myself, but I feel safer not having a server on the system. So there's also a standalone version of PHP that you can see in the first line here. PHP also has a separate command line version, which you should really use if you're going to do this, because in addition to not having a lot of the webby kind of stuff that you would normally have, you can also have separate configuration files, and you can do all kinds of cool stuff. It's also a smaller footprint, I believe. You can run these things as a scheduled service, so they can run like every hour, every 6 hours. You can have them run at midnight. You can have these things run on startup when people log in. You can run and have them loop continuously, which is a fine thing to do. In fact, you can have lots of these things running continuously on the same machine, and you can get some incredible efficiencies by doing that. Because most of these spiders and web agents, they'll send out a request someplace, and they spend almost all their time waiting for a reply. So if you can run them simultaneously, if we have a need to run them simultaneously, it's a worthwhile thing. Okay, I showed you how to download stuff using PHP. I tend not to do that. What I use instead for downloading stuff is a really great program called Curl. Can I see how many people here are familiar with Curl? Excellent, excellent. Curl is a command line tool for getting and sending files using a URL syntax. If you're interested in getting a copy, there's a couple of places where you can get it. I was thinking about putting it on the CD-ROM, but they've got binaries you can download for like 50 different platforms, and I didn't see the need to do that. Again, these URLs will appear at the end of the presentation, too. Curl supports a ton of internet protocols. And it's open source, but it's not GPL, which means basically there's no license whatsoever. My understanding, and if I'm misspeaking here, somebody please raise a hand, this stuff is completely free software, so you can do anything you want with it. Don't confuse Curl with the small URL with Curl, the client-side programming language, which is a product that the people at www.curl.com are selling. There's also a copy of the Curl manual on the CD-ROM. So if you're interested in looking at all the features, it's got tons of features. I'm going to just show you a few of them here. To use Curl, you just type Curl and then your target, and it'll take everything it receives and direct it to your standard output device, which in most cases is going to be your screen. You can also redirect the contents to a file. You can also use the number 3 there. You can use the O switch, so you can set the output to a specific file. The way I tend to use Curl is I use it inside of PHP, where I will do things. I'll actually run like a little shell to execute Curl within PHP. And the nice thing here, if you look, it'll take the entire contents of the default HTML page from this fictitious website and load it all into this variable. So I don't even have to create a file or anything. It's just all in that variable. So once it's in that variable, it's very convenient and very easy to parse out. If you're just writing PHP for a web application or something, never do this. Don't run command line stuff inside your web applications. Again, maybe I'm fooling myself. I'm feeling safe in doing this because there's no server attached to it. Here's an example of one of the options you can have with curl. In this example, I'm downloading the headers for the New York Times website. And there's all kinds of cool stuff. You can see what kind of server they're using. So if you're thinking back to the one idea where you monitor the internet technology that's used by the top companies, this is basically how you would do it. You can also see there's a cookie that's being set. Curl also allows you to send cookies back to servers, which is very nice. This was an HTML page, but you can download anything with curl. It doesn't have to be HTML. It can be images or Flash or what have you. It's got some nice ways of dealing with password-protected sites. You basically just set up your URL. You set up your user and password, and then you use the uswitch in curl to pass the username and password to whichever site you're using that uses standard authentication. The other thing that it's got that's really slick is it allows you to download sites that are encrypted. And all you have to do that is add a S to your protocol right here. And then it automatically decrypts it, and it will throw everything into this variable called page data, which is pretty slick. Something you need to remember when you're writing agents and you're going out to servers, you're going to leave a log, you know, in their log file that shows that somebody's been there. And if you don't do anything with curl, I think basically it just says curl and the version number. But you can make it look like anything you want. For example, if you wanted to run one where the agent name, so in the log file, you would see my special DEF CON X Spider version 1.0. That's what people would see in their log files. You can also set the referrer variable. This is another nice way of either identifying yourself or not identifying yourself. Think of the situation. Let's say you're a system admin and you've got a form that you use for some business purpose. And let's say it's a three-page form, and you notice that people are going to those three pages without being referred by the other ones. It would look a little weird. So what curl allows you to do using the eswitch is you can define what the referrer variable is. And I believe if you do this twice, no, there's another switch you can do. You can set up curl so it'll automatically do this. It'll take the last page you downloaded and use that as the referrer to the next page you download, which is kind of handy if you're doing spiders. Okay, I'm going to talk about parsing here just a little bit. The thing that makes parsing HTML pages difficult is that they're written by people. And, well, sometimes they're written by machines. That doesn't make it a whole lot easier. And you tend to get some really awful-looking HTML. If you think your HTML looks bad, just look at other people's. So there's a nice little utility out there you can download. And again, I've got these URLs at the end of the presentation as well. And what this does, it's called HTML Tidy. And you run it on a command line. I think the syntax is tidy source destination or something like that, and it'll take the source file and it'll clean up the HTML. So it'll do things like put in the slash td tags and, like, you know, the end table tags and your end row. It's a good thing to run on your HTML anyway. It just makes everything nice. Make sure your delimiters are in the right place and everything. And this is run from a command line just like curl is. So you can run HTML tidy within PHP, and it cleans up your pages for you before you parse them. It makes parsing much, much easier. Probably the hardest part technically of doing this thing is writing a parser. And my experience is that you end up writing a number of parsers depending on what it is you're trying to do. I've played around with a lot of different techniques over the years. I've tried doing things with regular expression, which is really hard to debug. And this is kind of the basic technique that I came up with here, and there's actually a bug in this. But basically what you do is you define what you're looking for, and you define it by some start criteria and then some end criteria. Now, to make this correct, my start criteria should really include the first delimiter right here. Otherwise, I don't think this would run. So you define a start criteria, an end criteria, and then the maximum distance you will allow between those. Okay, so that's number one. And I refer to that as an inclusive parse, because you're including everything between the start criteria and the end criteria. If you read that article I wrote for Web Techniques a couple years ago, I also talk about something I call an exclusive parse, which basically returns everything that's not between those two. And that's useful for doing things like removing HTML tags and that kind of stuff, although there are better ways of doing that now. But anyway, that's the inclusive parse. Most of the parsing that I do somehow does some type of an inclusive parse that works a lot like this. The second step, the reason there is a second step is that there's a lot of junk you can find in here. For example, if you're doing a spider and you want to get links, you're not just looking at hrefs, you're also looking at target and JavaScript. JavaScript's hard. There's a lot of stuff in there. So once you kind of get generally what you're looking for, you can come down and you can clear out stuff. You can remove equal signs, delimiters, whatever you happen to have. And then you save what's between. Basically, you save whatever is left. And there's actually, I think I've got some sample code on the CD that does an inclusive parse. Basically, to use it, you define what you want your array to be. In this example, we're going to be getting links. And again, there's an error here. There should be a little bit more here on the start. But basically, you define the page you want to download. And if you've received it in the ways that I showed earlier using PHP and curl, it's all in a variable. You define your start, again, which is wrong, your end and your maximum span, and then that will return an array of all the links that are on that page. Most of the time when you're parsing stuff on a website, it's easier than that because generally the information is stored in tables. This isn't a great example, but this is an example. We've got stuff stored in a table. It's not a great example because generally when you're doing this kind of stuff, you're going to have columns that represent a certain type of data, and then you're going to have rows that represent an instance of that data. And the way you do this, the easy way of doing it, is you basically split this. First, you will split the string, which is the downloaded page, on the end table row tags, and that'll give you an array of all the rows. And then you split on the table data end tag, and that'll create an array of all the data for the rows. The reason I say use the end tag instead of the beginning tag is that it's a lot easier because you don't have a lot of attributes in there. So we talked earlier about doing a web service that does weather. Well, this would be an easy way of doing it. And everything on the National Weather Service website is all public domain stuff anyway. We've paid for this with our tax dollars. We own it, so you can pretty much do whatever you want to with it. Okay, we talked earlier about interfacing one type of thing to another type of thing. And one of the neat things you can do is you can interface all kinds of websites together, all kinds of dissimilar things you can all pull together. And one of the ways you do that is by basically submitting form information to these sites. And the way you do it, the easiest way to do it, maybe it's not the easiest way to do it, I don't know. Take your target form that you want to interface to, download it as a local file, find where the form is. Change the, you want to change the method to get, if it's not already get. And you want to basically remove the action attribute. Fill out the form, hit submit, and then at the top of your browser, it'll show you all the form variables, well, the data you entered. I suppose there may be easier ways of doing this. I suppose I could write an agent that would return all the forms on a page and all their variables. That'd be a handy thing, possibly, huh? It's real easy to simulate a get method. If I'm doing this, I'll be doing this again in PHP. I'll set up a URL. I'll set up a query string, which is basically everything that follows the question mark. This is the definition of a get method, where you'll have your variable, then the data, variable data, and then I will just run curl, and I'll run my URL, my query string, and whatever the response is, it will end up in my upload variable. You can also simulate a post method. Remember, the difference between a get and a post is that a post actually sends a separate file that holds all this stuff. Gets are limited to generally about, 250 characters or something? You don't have those kind of limitations on a post. And curl makes it very easy to do this. You basically take your, within curl, you'll take your D flag, follow it by the data you want to do, another D tag, followed by another piece of data. That's one way of doing it. And curl's smart enough to take all this stuff and put it together and do the right thing with it. You can also, with curl, have stuff in a separate file that you want to upload. It's another way of doing it. Make sure that when you're doing this, that you match the method on your target page. Not only does it look bad in the log files if, you know, they do all their stuff using post and you've got a bunch of gets in there. In some cases, it may not work depending on how the server and the language register their variables. So make sure that you match the method of your target. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about fault tolerance. Thing to remember is that you are at the mercy and whim of other developers, assuming that you're not writing agents for your own network, which is something that you may often do. But since you're not always doing that, keep in mind that the content might change without your notice. So the challenge here is to make your spiders and agents smart enough to deal with change. It's nothing worse than getting a call from a client. It's down! You know, you run out there. And it can be something as simple as, you know, somebody added another column to a table or something. Anyway, things to remember. Observe case. Keep in mind that if you're developing your stuff on a Windows environment and you go off and you start using it on another environment, it may not work because all the Unix platforms are case sensitive, so keep that in mind. And it helps to develop these things on a Unix type platform. Make sure that your searches and filters are not case sensitive. And PHP, and I'm sure other languages have ways of doing that. The other thing you want to do is you want to leave the original case unchanged. I've seen some sloppy stuff where people will download stuff and then convert everything either to uppercase or lowercase. Well, you got to keep in mind that that changes your content as well. So unless you're using that as a template to find stuff in the original page, try not to do that. Beware of header redirects. Just because index.html was in one place one day doesn't mean it's going to be there the next day. For example, here's an example if you're not familiar with what's going on here. I'm downloading the headers from the University of Minnesota's main website, and I got a redirection. It's telling me that the real location of this page is right here. Okay? So if I had looked here, I never would have found it. So you've got two options here. You can either use the built-in feature of curl, which will automatically send you to the right page if there's a redirect, or you can do it manually. And by manual, I mean first downloading the headers, finding out if there's a redirect, and then going there instead. There's some advantage to doing it manually in that you're going to know the path information. You wouldn't otherwise know that. The reason that's important is if you're going to be downloading images or any other content or anything that's specified relative to where you are when you download that page, you're not going to know where that stuff is. So it's, I kind of favor having the full path information. Maybe one of the most important things you can do to be fault tolerant is to be proactive. Watch for site layout changes. Look for last modified changes in headers, although that's not real effective. Look for location changes in headers. Write code that looks for changes. And try automating this stuff. So if you've got a spider, especially if you're doing something for a client, if you've got a spider that's out looking for stuff, you should know that there's been a change before your client does. Assume that people and machines write non-compliant HTML. So by all means, run HTML tidy before you do anything. Assume that HTML lines will span lines of HTML. They do. And get in the habit of defining your protocols and URLs. And by that I mean make sure that you specify whether something's HTTP or HTTPS. Because otherwise, if you run into an encrypted site, it's not going to work. Another part of being fault-tolerant is to observe policies. Number one here is the reason I'm not doing that digital clipping service. I was unable to find reliable sources that did not have stated policies against robots or spiders and that kind of stuff. If I could find good places to get this stuff, maybe I would entertain doing that. But websites will generally tell you if they don't want to be spidered or roboted. They'll either state it on the website in English, or they'll put it in a meta tag, where basically they tell the robots, do not index. There may be a robots.txt file. If you want more information on how those work, here's a URL where you can go. Basically, they specify the portions of the site which they will allow you to spider and the ones that they don't want you to. And there are also machine-readable things. Here's an example of a header I pulled off of Yahoo, and you can see they reference some policies here. Okay. When you're running these things, you're going to generate a lot of data. So there's some stuff you can do with it. For example, if you're doing the spider that goes out and checks for flower prices in Chicago, that might be something you just run once. It runs. It gives you an answer. Otherwise, you can take the data and send it someplace. You can either send it on an email or you can send it to a fax. And again, that's easy to do, again, because you know you can write the stuff in little shell scripts. So it's easy to send email in PHP, and I think most Linux systems have a little fax utility that you can use that works very simply. The other thing you can do, if you want to save the data instead of just chucking it off someplace, is you can filter and store it in a database. Or you can do one of my favorite methods where I will have an agent or a spider running here, and it's got one or more targets off on the Internet, and it'll grab the information, filter it, and send it off to a web server using either post or get techniques, like we talked about earlier. And the web server will then store it into a central database. And then anyone with a browser can come by and view that information. That works very nicely. Oh, I got to tell a funny story first. You got to be careful how you do this. If you're doing something like this, I was doing this for a client, and I didn't debug my code real well. And it was running for about a day or two, and I got a call from the person that hosts some of my stuff. And she said, Mike, I got to ask you, what are you doing over there? Because I was actually generating about 2 gigabytes of traffic a day on a site that should not be generating 2 gigabytes of traffic. So I told her what I was doing, and I told her I would fix it. But, I mean, you can generate tons and tons of traffic with spiders, so be careful. Okay, advice and warnings. It's a good idea to observe other people's intellectual property rights. It's a good idea to adhere to websites' usage policies. If for no other reason, they can block your IP address. I've heard stories of Google doing this. It's not a good idea to spider Google. I know eBay does this, and that's really frustrating because one of the things I do some eBay consulting as well, and the information I want to get from eBay is not on their website. I'd like to write something that goes out and tells me which auction has had the most bids. You know, that would be useful information. Which auction has shown the greatest increase in price over time? I think you could do some really interesting statistics and learn a lot about eBay that way. Unfortunately, you can't do that kind of stuff because they will block your IP address. And it can be really a drag if you're going through a proxy because that means everyone who uses the proxy is going to be banned from the site as well. So, I already talked about the DNS registry is only allowing a minimum of requests from a single IP address on a given day, and I hear that it's thousands. Last piece of advice is to be responsible. Please don't generate email lists that are not opt-in lists that are used by spammers. And please do not write denial of service agents. A single 33 megahertz 486 can flood a T1 if you know what you're doing, and it's just not a nice thing. So please don't do that. All right, that is my speech. I have references here for curl, PHP, HTML tidy. There's stuff on the CD. I've got some sample code, and you've got a really old version of my presentation on there. And if you're interested in reading the Web Techniques article, it's the March 2000. It should be 2000, not 2002. And if any of you would like to send me an email, there's my email address. I'd be more than happy to talk to you about your experiences. Thank you.